The major travel arteries of the West Coast come right through our area. Interstate 5, the Union Pacific Railroad, and a major artery for non-human transportation. The Pacific Flyway is a boulevard for the birds. Migrating birds use it to get from winter hangouts to the places they frequent in the warm season and back. And while many people marvel to the sights and sounds of the birds in transit, two people are assigned to follow them. They are the Pacific Flyway ambassadors on a journey supported by several bird-friendly organizations, including the Klamath Bird Observatory in Ashland, which helped bring them to our studio today. They are John Carlos Rodriguez. Welcome to you.
Nice.
And Christian McWilliams is with us as well. Hi, Christian.
Hey, how are you?
So, John Carlos, let's start with you. You're from Puerto Rico. It sounds like you pretty much lived in nature. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was born and raised in the island of Puerto Rico, which is an island in the Caribbean, and I studied microbiology there and worked mostly in forestry. So that's how I basically became fond with birding, trying to identify birds in forests, and never worked a lot with migratory birds or shorebirds, but it's been really interesting, and the island, it's full of nature, and you'll go and see birds everywhere. It's really neat.
So microbiology, though, is what you studied, but birds are rather macro, aren't they?
Yeah, it's totally a different field, but everything's related, from the microbes that grow in the soil. In the soils where forests host birds, so it's all related somehow, yeah.
Christian McWilliams, you were born in Spain, I understand, and sounds like your life was a bit like a shuttle diplomacy in the early years. Tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up my early years of my life in southern Spain with my mother's family in Cali, and my father's family is in Pennsylvania. So most of my life been bouncing between the two countries. My parents wanted us to study in the U.S. With my father's family, but at the same time, my mother didn't want to be apart from her family for too long. So it's a constant back and forth. I feel like I've lived divided between the two cultures my whole life.
You straddle the two worlds, it sounds
like. Yeah, definitely. By the time I was 10, I'd crossed the Atlantic more times than I can count.
Knowing two cultures, I guess it doesn't surprise me to know that your degree is about human relations. So given that, how did you end up in an internship dealing with birds?
Well, my focus has always been more in a science direction. I think I went to school originally to study biology, but then I became really fascinated with international relations and environmental policy. So like I was saying before to Jean, that most of my students that worked around me, they were focused on sort of social injustices, while I was really focused on how nations are working together towards environmental concerns.
And in fact, they have worked together to make the presence of a lot of the birds on the Pacific Flyway possible. In fact, we're talking about the 100-year anniversary this year of the Migratory Bird Treaty, aren't we?
Yeah, that's a big reason why we're doing this. This year marks 100 years of the U.S. and Canada and other countries coming together to say, these birds, we can't just have policies that work in one country. They're covering huge swaths of land, even if they're only in one place for a week at a time. And it's important that we work together, because if we miss even one spot, they won't find the food they need the time they need the rest.
And there are other issues, too, like when one country is still using DDT, for example, and another is not. I mean,
exactly.
That can make a real difference in what...
Yeah, this act basically started between Canada and the United States, and then Mexico joined, and we're expecting that all over South America countries can join as well. And it basically protects every habitat where migratory birds live. So it also makes it illegal to trade any part of a migratory bird. So it's really neat.
We're talking to John Carlos Rodriguez and Christian McWilliams. They are the Pacific Flyway ambassadors following the migration patterns of the birds on the Pacific Flyway this spring. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So how is the ambassador program set up? I mean, is there one agency in particular, or one organization that started it all, or is it all just a collaborative between places like the Klamath Bird Observatory? John Carlos?
Yeah, it's a partnership between Environment for the Americas, which is an NGO based in Boulder, Colorado, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we're basically traveling up north and simulating the Pacific Flyway with the birds, visiting different sites where even both NGOs and federal agencies work with conservation, habitat conservation, and outreach.
Yeah, typically, Environment for the Americas has individuals on site specifically doing bird surveys, and Fish and Wildlife Service and Environment for the Americas decided that, hey, this year marks an important year. Let's do something cool. And yeah, we were lucky enough to not just be at one specific site with them. We managed to get this amazing position going up the West Coast.
Had either of you known much about the Pacific Flyway before you applied for this?
Well, I studied a while in Washington State, so yeah, I attend to the migratory bird day there, and I kind of had a sense about the Pacific Flyway, but never thought it was this big, and that birds will fly this long with wind and rain. So yeah, it's really interesting for me.
How much distance do they cover? Because, you know, we tend to think of them in terms of like, well, they go from where we are to someplace else, so it's a very, very long corridor, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's for many species, it's from the very bottom of South America to the very tips of Canada. I mean, we found a bird that was banded last week that the only time it had been like discovered since was when it was first banded 10 years ago in the very northern edge of Canada. So it's about 2,000 miles away.
Wow, so they really do cover. I mean, we're talking up to, what, 6,000 or 8,000 miles in some cases, aren't
we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's pretty incredible. So what do you do on a given day? What's a day's activity like for guys who are Pacific Flyway ambassadors?
Yeah. Well, we drive a lot during the day sometimes, and other days when we're staying at the different refuge, we go out to the field with the staff of U.S. Fish and Wildlife and basically learn about all the conservation strategies that they're applying there. And
yeah, it's been mind-blowing to meet all these amazing people who are really committed to the programs of conserving their various refuges and realizing just how much work goes into that. And I mean, we've been able to see both where water comes from, how they manage water. We get to meet people who's just focused on bird banding. There's just a wide variety of different people all committed to the same goal of conservation, just doing a lot of hard work.
We also visit NGOs as today in like the Klamath Bird Observatory and help them with whatever they're doing that day, from bird banding to habitat restoration.
There must be some fairly mind-blowing things. I mean, I can think just from our own neck of the woods, talking about the Klamath Wildlife Refuges, for example, and the fact that there's water shared with agriculture and trying to save water back for fish and all the other implications of water usage in areas that don't get very much water. And we're trying to save some out for the birds at the same time.
Exactly. I mean, I think a big reason why we're doing this is because we want people in our generation, as we come into a position of power 20, 30 years from now, to realize that this water, as much as water needs to be used for a wide variety of things, there are plenty of species in the ecosystem that need to be protected, and we have to make sure that the water is in the locations they need them as well. And I mean, if it's just the sheer amount of water that it takes to manage a refuge, to ensure that not just the water it gets naturally, but the water that's imported to it. It's been a mind-blowing experience, yeah.
Grab your headphones. We're going to invite listeners to join us with some phone calls here at 800-838-3760 and by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Christian McWilliams and Jean Carlos Rodriguez are the Pacific Flyway Ambassadors, mimicking the migration patterns of the birds this year. So you can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Again, 800-838-3760 and by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Morning.
Hi.
Do Canada geese still migrate? And if not, why not?
Okay. Easy, simple question. Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate that. And Christian?
Yeah. Many do, but many are also staying in the same locations. And largely because for many of those geese, they can find plenty of food in our cities. It may not be the food we would like them to be eating, but they've adapted to a different setting. We spoke with Fish and Wildlife Service, and we've been told that some subspecies have decided to stay in around various cities, and others are still doing the same migration patterns, and it may very well be a more divided species with more time.
Is it Canada geese or Canadian geese? I think I hear this argument every week.
I'm not going to take a side on that one. I'm not sure.
Very diplomatic of the guy who has the degree in international relations. So how much of a crash course did you guys have to get before you were set free on the flyway?
We were in a week in San Diego for the training with Environment for the Americas, mostly bird ID and outreach education and environmental education. So, yeah, it was basically an really intense week where we learned a lot and went out to the field every day, guided bird walks and by our own identified most shorebirds. So, yeah, it was really good.
From 6 to 6. So yeah, we were just basically constantly surrounded by all these wonderful experts that knew more about subjects than I will ever know.
Is it pretty much just shorebirds you're looking at, or are you looking at all kinds of species?
Migratory shorebirds are our focus, but at the end of the day, I mean, there's tons of different species that need a lot of the same needs, and promoting them and speaking to people about them and getting observations on them are just as important.
Environment for the Americas mostly work with shorebirds. That's why the training was mostly in shorebirds, because the other interns are going to be at specific sites working with shorebirds. So,
is there a particular shorebird that is the rock star of the group, the one that you're paying more attention to than some other?
No. In my case, I love the black-necked stilt, but that's like a personal preference that the NGO works with every shorebird. Yeah.
The weather has been spotty, I would think, and a lot of wet. So tell us about some of the conditions you've been working in when you're doing your field work, Christian.
Yeah, there's been some rough moments where we've gotten rained out, and a lot of times people were saying, oh, you just missed this huge flock, and oh, but maybe they'll be out there. Oh, they're probably hiding because it's raining. But we've had a lot of great days with wonderful weather that have just been absolutely great.
What is there one thing that has... First of all, when did you first hit the road? How long have you been out there?
We started on the 3rd of March,
I think.
Yeah, so it's been almost a month now.
Mm-hmm. So almost 4 weeks. So So what is there one thing above all others that stands out to either of you so far in what you've seen? Maybe a most fascinating place, if not a place that had birds in it at the moment. Mm-hmm. John Carlos?
Well, I think the Carrizo Plains was an awesome spot. We went there. It was a long trip, and it was astonishing. It was beautiful. Like, all that perfect rounded hills were amazing. It rained out a lot, and we didn't see many birds, but it was a really interesting experience. We got stuck there with our Camry, so we spent an extra 6 hours there in the Carrizo Plains, so it was all an experience.
You got stuck really in the mud, your car?
Yeah. But it was stuck in the most beautiful place I've ever seen, so we just camped out for a moment. We're like, you know what, let's just enjoy this, because this is great.
So where is the Carrizo Plain?
So we went up 5 in... How long did it take us to get there from San Diego?
It was like 5 hours.
Yeah, five hours.
San Diego.
And it's kind of isolated. I didn't even know it existed before this trip. And I think most people I speak to don't know where it is. Mm-hmm. And it's a plain isolated by a lot of mountains. And we went up 5, and it was about 5 hours north. Yeah, that's about right.
So how much longer, about 4 weeks to a month out there now, how much longer does the Pacific Flyway Ambassador Program take you?
So we'll be ending in late May, once we get to Denali, Alaska, and then I'll be heading back to Portland, and John will be heading out to Alberta at that point. So we got another two and a half months left.
Okay, so 3 full months out there. Are you feeling some kinship with the birds at this point? I mean, given what they have to go through to get from place to place, you just have to put your foot to the floor a little harder to go faster.
Yeah, even in the car, we kind of get tired driving for 4 or 5 hours. So imagine the birds flying all the way for miles and miles in different varied conditions. So,
yeah.
How long does it take some of them to make the journey? I mean, when you're talking about trying to mimic their migration, I mean, your 3 month journey, is it parallel to what some of them are going through, or do they take longer? I would think some of them going as far as they're going would take a long time.
Yeah, for a lot of the species, they're constantly moving. It's just a seasonal shift at all times. They're going from breeding grounds and back down. And we spoke to someone who's telling us that at times they fly just an hour to the next location, and times they fly all night to the next location. But yeah, it's sort of a constant move for those birds. They're not really at home in any one location.
How much did you guys get a course in the history of the Pacific Flyway and some of the things that have happened, like pesticide use and some of the other environmental concerns that have cropped up over the years?
I would say most of what we got briefed out on was the policies that have been put in place since a lot of these disasters.
And we've encountered that, at least in San Luis National Wildlife Refuge, that most agriculture works with the refuge. So they're implementing more sustainable ways to protect the birds while growing their crops.
So given that you're ambassadors, you're ambassadors to the birds, so how do you report back to the human population about what you've done? What kinds of things are you doing or will you be doing to let us know about the results of the mission?
We're basically everywhere talking about what we're doing. When we go out, when we're working in the refuge, when we go to restaurants, we talk about it to the waitress. And basically everywhere we go, we try to bring out the topic and try to engage people in birding and conservation.
Yeah, we're managing a blog at birdtrippers.com, and you can also find us on Facebook at birdtrippers. But basically, we're trying to report our entire experience for people, And John's right. I feel like we've been sitting in coffee shops and someone just brings us our coffee and it's like, hey, let's talk to that person for 5 minutes. And we just always been great conversations and it's been lovely.
Is there a holy grail? Is there like a biggest moment you're anticipating lying ahead of you or has it already happened to the Carrizo Plains or something?
Denali. Yeah, definitely.
Just, Yosemite also was like a really neat place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So are you pretty much sticking to the I-5 corridor? You're wandering east at all? Are you going to the Klamath Basin refuges, for example?
So we just came out of Klamath. We were there for about 2 days. And I know that we're going to be winding back and forth in Oregon and Washington. We're going to Florence after this location. But I think we're not just staying on the coast. We're trying to go in a little bit. We do see more land birds in those places. But those refuges are dealing with the same problems.
All right. So it sounds quite fascinating. Busy, though.
Yeah.
We have a question here from another listener. Here's Anne and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Christian McWilliams and Jean-Carlos Rodriguez.
Well, I think that this is a wonderful adventure for you two young men, and I'm glad that you have the opportunity to do this. I was wondering if you saw the sandhill cranes, if they were still at the Klamath Basin when you were there. What did you think of them? Thank you.
All right, sandhill cranes. Thanks for that. Appreciate it, Ann.
Well, we saw 2 sandhill cranes on our way to Klamath Basin. We didn't spot them in the refuge, but we did on our way to. It was 2 of them, and for me, it was incredible. I've never seen cranes in my life, so it was really incredible for me. And we took pictures of them. You can see it in our social media. So
okay, so we'll look for you at birdtrippers.com and Facebook Bird Trippers.
Facebook
as well.
And Instagram and Twitter.
Well, a lot of people envy what you're doing, so best of luck on the rest of your journeys and send pictures from Denali. We'll be looking for those.
Awesome, thank you.
Jean-Carlos Rodriguez and Christian McWilliams are the Pacific Flyway Ambassadors. The Klamath Bird Observatory sponsored them in the Ashland area. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having us.
Good to see you both.